It's Wednesday, May 4th. Welcome to Market Foolery. I'm Chris Hill. Joining me in studio today from Motley Fool One and Stock Advisor, all the way from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Alex Scherer. Good to have you in-house, my friend.
So happy to be here.
May the 4th be with you.
And may the 4th be with you.
We'll get to Star Wars at some point because we have to. Come on. I know there's a lot of Star Wars stuff out there, and certainly in the last year or so, but this is May 4th, so it's pretty much everywhere. But earnings palooza rolls on, so we'll look at the latest quarter from Priceline. We'll dip into the full mailbag. Let's start with Zillow, though. I feel like this episode, maybe the subtitle for this episode is it's all about expectations, or the future is now, because Zillow's quarter, the first quarter loss was bigger than expected.
Right.
That's not good.
Right.
And yet the stock up double digits.
Yep.
Because they're pretty optimistic about the rest of 2016.
Yeah, they're really, I mean, it was a very strong sales growth quarter, so that's really what's got the stock moving today. And not just, revenues as a general concept, but really why they're getting the kind of sales growth that they are getting and accelerate at an accelerating rate. And that's really because they have, there's this thesis that's out there that Zillow's total addressable market is a little more mature than you might otherwise think for a very high multiple, high growth kind of company. But because of the Trulia acquisition last year, that thesis got a little bit of promotion that maybe they just needed to go out and buy market share because they weren't going to be able to generate it organically. But really what's going on with the sales growth this quarter and really last quarter as well is that they're proving that they're really building their own expanding industry-wide, expanding total addressable market. And the way that they're doing it is by focusing not on just, trying to get as many real estate agents online or spending as possible, but really focusing in on those highest producers in the entire industry and sort of promoting them and promoting their success. And it's really kind of a nice little flywheel that is moving along because those highest producing real estate agents are the ones that have the highest piece of the business in terms of the breaks that they get with their realtor brand. Maybe they get 75% of every deal instead of 50% of every deal for the lower producing agents. And that means that they've got a bigger advertising budget. They can spend that budget on, at Zillow. And that market expands as those premier agents are more and more successful to the detriment of the lower producing agents. And so the total agent counts are pretty modest. They've been going down for a number of quarters and went down again this quarter, but in that sort of premier agent channel, those highest producing, highest commission paying agents that are on the Zillow properties, they are expanding at a huge rate, something like 75% this quarter for agents that spend more than $5,000 on Zillow's properties. And in addition to that, the total revenue that Zillow is getting from each of those agents is expanding as well. So that the term you would use there is they've got an increased wallet share of those highest producing agents. And so that's really a dynamic that you can see why that would continue, and that success kind of begets success. And so that total addressable market for Zillow really seems to be expanding. And I think that's what's got the stock moving today, is that thesis is really playing out.
You know this company better than I do. By my observation, it seems like the Trulia acquisition took about as long as they originally forecast it would. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean because I remember thinking at the time, oh, this should go pretty quickly. And I think Zillow did a pretty good job of setting expectations of how long the Trulia acquisition would take. Did it in fact play out that way, or is that just my perception?
No, it went fine. It was one of a couple of things that made 2015 very, very messy in terms of the optics, the financial statements for Zillow Group. But the merger was clean. It was successful, and they now have huge market share in that online segment of the real estate advertising market. But there were no troubles there. There's unrelated to the Trulia acquisition, lawsuits going on, and that's one of the reasons that the bottom line EPS figure this quarter was a little bit lower, and will be for the remainder of the year, because there's a legal budget that they need to pay. But this is something that the market is very clearly looking past, and saying these are truly one-time expenses, that they'll be resolved with no problem. And what we're seeing is that the underlying market, the underlying industry that Zillow can play into, is growing more rapidly than previously expected. And so, everyone's very happy with the stock today.
Is Zillow large enough now that it is not heavily reliant on a couple of big U.S. markets? I'm just thinking about how over the last 6 to 12 months, we've had conversations in this studio, and I've certainly seen it play out in other business news outlets, the idea that, well, we're not necessarily expecting another 2008, 2009 in terms of the overall housing market, mm-hmm. but you can look at individual markets in the United States and say, we don't have a national housing bubble, but we might have one in San Francisco. Right, yeah. We might have one in
individual
Seattle, that
regions.
Kind of thing. But it seems like Zillow is I think they're
definitely diverse enough now that there wouldn't be one regional housing plateau, the energy market is so tough and Texas real estate therefore has a big downturn. That sort of story doesn't look to me, given Zillow's size and given Zillow's momentum, like something that would really hinder the investment thesis going forward.
It's been a rough couple of weeks for Priceline shareholders in the wake of the news last week about the CEO leaving effective immediately. First quarter profits look pretty good. Hotel room night reservations up 31%. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah.
Guidance for Q2.
Yeah, Priceline always.
Not good.
The Priceline always sandbags their guidance numbers. It was true this quarter. This quarter was no different, and it seems like the quarter moving forward is no different as well. This current quarter, they had guided to 12.5% sales growth and $9.70 in earnings. They ended up doing 17% or 17.5% sales growth and $10.50 in earnings. And this is really typical, these kinds of beats, because they set very low expectations. They say that our performance marketing, the online advertising that we do, has very, very high returns on investment, but we're going to make these certain assumptions that those returns just aren't sustainable throughout the rest of the quarter, and so we'll give very conservative guidance on the kind of profitability that we can have. And then quarter after quarter after quarter, they say, well, it turned out that we still are performing at a very high level, and our ROIs do continue to look great. And so this quarter is no different. And yet the stock seems to have these kinds of sell-offs. This quarter in particular, that level of conservatism seems to me like it's maybe even a little bit more sandbaggy. Is that even a word I'm allowed to use?
It is now.
A little more sandbaggy than usual. And I think it's very likely to me that, given Jeff Boyd is now sort of a week back on the job, that he felt no compunction at all to put any kind of aggressive forecasts out there. And so maybe that's why the sandbagging is even worse this quarter than usual. But, the guidance is what the guidance is, and analysts will set their expectations based on those figures, because they just, they assume management knows best, which usually they do. And so that's why the stock is selling off today.
Jeff Boyd is interim CEO?
He's the interim CEO. He was the longtime CEO of the Priceline Group. He was responsible for about 100 bagger in the stock in his tenure with the company. He was very well compensated for it. He's definitely a three comma guy at this point. And he moved into the chairman role when Darren Huston took over the CEO role. Darren Huston was the CEO of the Booking.com segment of Priceline, which is their biggest moneymaker globally. But with the scandal that unfolded last week, Jeff Boyd very quickly took the reins. The market didn't seem to have have much of a problem with that at all because they have a lot of faith in Jeff's talents. I'm a little bit more circumspect about that leadership transition, especially in an industry as intense as online travel. Leadership, you know, makes I feel like it makes the difference. There's really night and day if you look at, you know, Orbitz and Expedia and Priceline and look at, you know, 10 or 15 year charts of those three, you can see how much of a difference leadership makes. So I'm a little bit more circumspect at, you know, 27 times trailing earnings or 20 times forward earnings. It's not a stock that I'm aggressively, you know, adding to even as it sells off today. I'm the sort that would be a little bit more hesitant and waiting to see how this new CEO search plays out before getting super excited about Priceline. Even though I recognize that it's a, you know, premier top player in the industry, highest quality player with really an open-ended growth story for online travel as an industry.
I was just going to say, even if you allow for the sandbagging, the stock being down slightly more than 10% so far today tells me that at least part of this is people on Wall Street looking at this company and saying, not only are we not crazy about the guidance, and even if we're going to grant you that you're sandbagging, you don't have a CEO.
Right.
Like, I'm assuming that at least part of this is people who are thinking about this the same way you are, which is, well, I'm going to feel a little bit more confident when I know exactly who is going to be sitting in the corner office.
Sure. I mean, to the extent you believe leadership matters, and we clearly do.
We do.
Especially on you know, the group that I work with on Stock Advisor Newsletter. You know, we're very big proponents that the best leadership in the world is worth their weight in gold. And that has been the case for Priceline historically, and I believe that, you know, will be the case for the best companies moving forward. And so it'll be really important. On the call, Jeff Boyd said, listen, I'm not going to give you any kind of timeline. We're not going to do a super quick search. This is obviously a supremely important decision we need to make, and we'll take all the time that we need to take to make it. I don't know if that would have resulted in people, you know, being a little more worried on that aspect. Or, you know, it could just be simply that the guidance was, you know, more conservative than even their conservative past, and that they, you know, talked a little bit more about the kind of increased advertising spending that they're going to have, and people look around this industry and see, you know, something like Marriott and Starwood merger and the kind of the loyalty programs that these companies have to try and encourage higher levels of direct booking on the hotel's website rather than Expedia's or Priceline's website. And people say, look, you know, maybe the margin profile for a company like Priceline, even though it's best in the industry, doesn't have the same kind of aggressive expansion potential that we thought it did yesterday.
Don't you think Jeff Boyd has to be just a little bit angry
about
what happened?
I imagine he's absolutely livid.
The guy he picked to be CEO.
Yeah. Well, he was, you know, and he's chairman of the board, and the board of directors made a very, very quick decision, it appears, to, you know, as soon as this, you know, scandal was brought up, that even though it doesn't appear to have had anything to do with the business or
the finances
or anything like that. It was strictly a personal relationship that he was, you know, out the door, and they did the right thing. Absolutely. That, you know, they are they're leaders in the industry. These kind of business leaders, they need to show, you know, that they stand by the sort of, you know, ethical, the right kind of ethics that you would want to see in that kind of leadership. And and they said, you know, bye-bye, you're out today, and you don't get your compensation, and you don't get the vest this or that, and you're out the door, and that's it.
We don't know who the next CEO is going to be, but here's what we do know. That person is going to be vetted.
Absolutely.
I
get the impression that it's not going to be somebody from the online travel agency, maybe somebody from elsewhere in the tech scene. The only clues that Jeff Boyd gave, you know, most recently was that they want to have somebody with, you know, a very successful proven track record in an industry, in a very large company that has a heavy reliance on technology as, you know, as they conduct their business. So maybe somebody like Marissa Mayer or Carly Fiorina or something like that. And you can't see my smirking with, you know, behind the microphone here.
It is just an audio podcast. MarketFoolery@fool.com is our email address from Keith Lear. What is going on with Ford Motor? They have great sales, The F-150 is still the number one pickup, et cetera, and the company still has maintained its course since the previous and highly successful chairman of the board left. Any thoughts?
I do have some thoughts. So I can explain the fears or worries. I'm not going to say that these are my fears or worries. I own no position in Ford. We have no recommendation in Ford for any of the groups that I work with, but I can explain what's happening here.
Let me just say from the standpoint of the stock's down about almost 15% over the past year at a time when the market is basically flat. And
it trades at like 6 or 6.5 times earnings.
To Keith's point, if you're just looking at the numbers they're putting out on a monthly basis, it's perfectly understandable to think this is a business that appears to be well run and is executing at a pretty high level.
Yeah, both the business and the industry, in fact, has had a very so Ford had, during the global financial crisis, the auto industry had a severe downturn. Ford also, as an industry participant in this supremely cyclical industry, had its own downturn, but didn't fare nearly as poorly as its major competitors. Certainly didn't go bankrupt. But the fear today is that we've had a multi-year rise out of the ashes for the auto industry, and that today's performance potentially is kind of as good as it gets. We're in a highly cyclical industry. We see Ford doing about $2 a share in earnings. It doesn't seem likely that margins can expand dramatically from here. This is much going to be either at peak margins right now or at much closer to peak margins than the margins that they can produce throughout the entire economic cycle. And even though it's a global firm, Ford, it earns about 90% of its pre-tax earnings in the North American market. So to the extent that we are closer to peak volumes and certainly peak margins than any other scenario, the future, the multiple will come down dramatically for these kinds of cyclical firms. You see the same thing in the energy industry, that as performance peaks out, you'll see the multiple compress dramatically. And so you see Ford at something like 6 times earnings. You think, well, they're firing on all cylinders. That makes no sense at all. But if it's 6 times this current earnings and the true margin performance ability of Ford is not 9.5% in the U.S., which is what they're doing right now, but is closer to 5 or 4% in the U.S. through the cycle, it's 9.5 at the top and 0 at the bottom, then that multiple compression is really justified. And so that's the fear that's out there right now, is that volumes will continue to grow, but that the credit markets are very loose, especially in auto finance. Actually, I'm getting a new car in a couple of weeks, so I was looking at
Ford
credit rates.
F-150?
Not
yeah.
A Ford F-150, though. No, my car will have a little bit better mileage than that. But I was looking at, and it's not even just the captive finance companies. It's also the local credit unions. I was looking, I can get like a 1.1% rate for at 120% of the value of the car, taking out a loan if I wanted to do that. So credit markets are loose. That allows people to get the upgraded leather or the upgraded sound system, stuff like that. And that is very high margin kind of product for auto makers. And to the extent that it's not getting any better and likely gets worse, you'll see margins come down and you'll see volumes top out.
You and I have children. Together with other people.
We do indeed.
So I don't think when I hear about like high-end leather, it's like, no.
Well, it wipes off a little bit easily too than the cloth.
It's like,
no,
I got
right?
kids. I'm not getting the high-end
leather.
You
definitely don't want like the perforated leather with the cooling coming out of the back of the seats, because you just get all sorts of goop in those perforated ones.
Yeah. How are you and or your kids celebrating Star Wars Day?
How are we celebrating? I'm celebrating it by being in the office and putting corny jokes on the dad jokes board
on the internal
communication system, the Slack system.
Will there be a viewing? I know it's a school night, but will there be a viewing tonight?
No, very unlikely. My eldest daughter has swimming tonight, and so the boys will be dragged along for that. And anyway, we do Pizza Night on Friday, so we'll probably do The Force Awakens again on Friday.
Delayed.
Yeah, delayed gratification. But until they are able to get their college degrees and make their own decisions for that sort of thing, that we're going to stick to. Speaking of college degrees, what degree does a Wookiee get, Chris?
Do tell.
Well, it's obvious. A Chewbacca laureate. I'll be here all day.
You're not getting that on Bloomberg. I don't care what they're doing at Bloomberg. You're not getting that on their podcast. Alex Scherer, thanks for being here, man.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and the Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. That's going to do it for this edition of Market Foolery. The show is mixed by Dan Boyd. I'm Chris Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.